Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast with your host, Dr. Dana Pang, and myself, Dr. Elise Hutt. Join us as we talk to inspiring clinicians who have redefined their careers.
This week on the podcast, we have a very special episode. This was recorded live at CCIM 24, our recent conference with the theme Meet Me in the Metaverse. You'll hear from APROF Fiona Brownfoot, a clinician scientist, obstetrician, and co-founder of Cali Healthcare, a startup developing novel devices to improve fetal monitoring. To watch this recording in full and many more, you can still attend CCIM 24 as a virtual attendee. Find out more by visiting creativecareersinmedicine.com. And with that, I'll hand you over to APROF Brownfoot.
Welcome, everyone. A huge thank you for having me and a huge thank you to AmMDeep and the rest of the CCIM team. It's been an incredibly inspiring conference and it's been so nice to be around so many other, you know, like-minded people really hoping to make a difference within their specialties. Now, my name's Fiona Brownfoot. I'm an obstetrician and I do work clinically. I'm also a scientist and I've got a lab at the University of Melbourne. And I also have a medtech startup, which is why I've been asked to come and talk to you today. And when I was first asked to come and talk about our startup, I thought that I'd really pitch it at kind of a toolbox of everything you need to know or everything that I wish that I had have known in order to go from just that concept, that ideation, all the way through to a product which is ready for an FDA pivotal clinical trial. So it all starts with a problem within your specialty. And then that leads to the idea. And for me as an obstetrician, perhaps one of the biggest pain points in our profession is fetal monitoring. And this is because it's hospital-centric and clinician-intensive. We still use technology that was developed in the 1970s, which is a CTG machine. Now, this is an ultrasound-based technology, and it can't really be miniaturized. It requires the woman to come into hospital, lie down on a bed, and it must be placed directly over the baby's heartbeat because it works by emitting sound waves that then bounce off that baby's heartbeat back to the monitor. So this means if the mum moves or the baby moves, we get signal dropout. And really dangerously, sometimes it can pick up that maternal heartbeat rather than the fetal heartbeat, which can in fact be very dangerous. It also really limits our women in labour because a lot of our patients like to be very active in labour. And it was really when I went to an engineering conference, a biomed tech conference, and I met somebody, it was either from Apple or Google at this conference, and they gave a big talk. This product had just been released only a few years earlier, the iWatch, which is now one of the most wearable medical devices. And they were getting a huge amount of big data all around the heart rate. And they were just wondering, what on earth do we now do with all of this data? And it was really this combination of the problem in the labour ward as well as this new wearable technology made me think there's got to be a better way for us to monitor these babies and perhaps a wearable such as this, just a simple sticker that the mother could wear that would wirelessly go to an app which she could hear the baby's heartbeat and it could be connected to the clinician, allowing these telehealth services so she wouldn't need these big fetal monitoring units anymore. And indeed, these could happen in the comfort of her own home with her toddler or indeed in the boardroom. Many of our patients are now, you know, have careers and not able to spend days in hospital for monitoring. Perhaps this would be the ideal way for us to monitor babies moving forward. And so after having this idea, and I must say it looked a lot more warty than this in my brain, but we've had a few years to develop this technology now, it really meant that I then needed to go and branch out to a wider team, a multidisciplinary team. So the first person I spoke to was this guy who is Professor Greg O'Grady, and he's a colorectal surgeon who is developing a product through his startup called Elimetry, which is a gut monitoring startup, and it obtains the electrical activity of the gut for him to help diagnose gut motility disorders. And I spoke to Greg and he said, feet, it sounds great. Yep, I'd love to have you. I'll be your mentor. But you need engineers on your team and you need to build this yourself with your team. And it was really in talking to other colleagues, they said, there's some guys in the electrical engineering department that I think might be interested and I think they've done some fetal monitoring. And these are my co-founders, Emerson Keenan and Professor Palani, and they're electrical engineers who have been all the way from the conception of this idea through to the device that we've got today. So first of all, it really started as a research project. Like, one, could we detect this baby's heartbeat to give us a very reliable trace, because the fetal heart rate amplitude is very small and there's a lot of electrical activity, both from the gut, the maternal heart rate, the external electrical activity. And we thought that the electrical activity of the baby's heart rate was the best technology to allow us to develop a sensor patch that could be positioned once that would continuously pick up that baby's heartbeat. So initially recruited 40 women, and a few of them took photos of themselves so that they thought they looked like they had a bomb on them. And we positioned 24 electrodes over their abdomen. And we found that with those 24 electrodes, we needed, in fact, 6 electrodes and a reference, and we could get the same level of accuracy of that fetal heart if we position those electrodes within this configuration. So this allowed us to develop this research-grade device. We then applied our research-grade device on 120 women, and we had a training and a validation cohort. And it was with artificial intelligence that has allowed us to develop, to extract that signal to a level whereby indeed we get a 90% accuracy of detecting that baby's heartbeat, which is well above the 80% required by the FDA. So we celebrated for about 24 hours, and then we realized the mountain of commercialization ahead of us. If any patient is ever going to use this technology, we need to then go through those commercialization roadmap. And so this is where we now needed commercial funding, because our aims were no longer research-based. We now had commercial aims. So we got our industrial designer, Jim, on board, and he did some beautiful CAD designs for us, which is just drawings of the device. And then we went and applied for commercialization grants. So we needed then to come up with a business plan, financial model. We needed to obtain letters of support from leaders in the field. And we also needed questionnaires from pregnant women as well as clinicians in support of a different technology to monitor the fetus. And this allowed us to obtain grants from Neobonica, which is a medtech firm within Melbourne, as well as the Medical Device Partnering Program in Adelaide. And they allowed us to develop a concept prototype, which then we were able to pitch to some funders, which included the University of Melbourne Genesis Pre-Seed Fund, as well as LaunchVic. And this allowed us to obtain $1 million in commercial grade funds to then help build our concept demonstrator prototype, which, look, nothing says it like the actual device. So this is what we've developed. That's the hardware of our device, and it sits on the charger. And then we've got the sensory array as well. And this device then connects wirelessly with an iPhone app and also to a clinician portal. We're currently undergoing our usability studies, and once we've made some slight tweaks to the prototype, this will then mean we'll have the pivotal prototype. And this is the prototype that you then take through the regulators and through the FDA and TGA clinical studies. And then, of course, once you've achieved that, then you'll have the beta product, which is the product that you then can sell. So this commercialization funding has also allowed us to refine our regulatory process. And I would really advocate, if anyone is going to do a medical device, you can really try and find a predicate device and go down that 510K pathway. It's a much easier pathway than de novo, which is far more difficult as well as quite expensive. Then you've got to also go through a design process that must be traceable and verifiable by the FDA and TGA. So they need to be able to go to the facility to ensure that they have ISO 13485 standards, which is a standard for medical technologies. And then you've got to go through that clinical evidence, the safety and performance and the usability evidence, ensuring that you've got both patients and clinicians that have gone through using the device to ensure that it is developed and can be used for its intended use. And so we've just submitted our FDA pre-submission, which is called the QSUB. And so you submit all of those documents as well as your clinical plan to the FDA, and then they will give you a QSUB meeting, for which we've got in May, which is exciting, and at 4 a.m. So, which is a great time for me. So I'm not delivering a baby. I have nothing on at 4 a.m. So initially with the FDA pre-submission, this comprises the subject device. So the subject device, you've got your predicate device, which we've got here, and you must include the documents of a product description, intended use, clinical study, regulatory and clinical strategy. And for us, we're going down that 510K pathway, so we've got an equivalent device for which we're claiming that our device is equivalent to another device which has FDA regulatory approval. And then we needed to submit our clinical evaluation. So here we've designed our pivotal clinical trial. We've shown that a similar study that was performed by our comparison device. We've included our recruitment sites, which in the US, you know, it'd be great if we could run the study in Australia just for ease as well as just financial reasons as well. But this then means that we must ensure that we've got a certain number of patients of a certain BMI and a certain skin colour type. And so we've got to put in, you know, our enrolment and what that enrolment would look like, as well as those reference documents. So that is the risk register user requirements, engineering requirements, software requirements, ensuring we're HIPAA compliant, the predicate device documents also. And then the next step for us will be then looking for that Series A round. So that is looking at a manufacturer to manufacture the device, achieving that FDA pivotal clinical trial, and through then to selling the device. Now, perhaps the biggest thing that I'd recommend is ensuring that you've got your network or just reaching out to people that have done it before you. And for me, it was really Greg O'Grady, who he's now left surgery. So he's the CEO of Alimetry, and he spends a lot of his time now in the US where he's commercializing Alimetry. Joe Scroy, he's an obstetrician whom I've worked with. We trained together at the Royal Women's many years ago. And he's done a number of startups. So Locum Agency, which he's sold. He's now a director of Clinic to Cloud. He's been super valuable, as well as a super old friend who's in fintech, just given a lot of commercialization advice. Richard McIver, who is here, and I've done the AusSet program, and I can't recommend that AusSet program. And he's doing another program next year. So I'd strongly advise, if you're interested in medtech, to join this program. Paul Clark, I cannot recommend you get a really good regulatory person super early so that you can really then plan out your regulatory process. And of course, all of my colleagues, I have all these great zany ideas. I just run down to the birth suite, have a chat to the midwives, have a chat to my obstetricians. They all kind of know me now. And yep, fee, that sounds good. Or, you know, a makeup compact design sounds great because that's what women know. And that's why we designed it that way. And then it's been a really fun ride going along this commercialization pathway. I tell you, clinical medicine would be so much easier than this. And this is a massive roller coaster with high highs, but very low lows. But it has allowed me to meet the vice premier at a LaunchVic event, and then some podcasting. Harvard invited me to give a presentation, then just some media along the way as well. And yeah, so I would encourage you, if you are interested in medtech startups, reach out. I'm so happy to help anyone because of all of the help that I've been given along the way. I couldn't have gotten to this point without it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Fiona, for that. I'm sure we'll all agree that looks like an incredibly daunting and rigorous protocol, but it's so good to see you break it down and just describe the people and how you actually go from step to step. I'm sure your inbox will be very full in the next few days.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech podcast network. Visit the Creative Careers in Medicine website in the show notes this episode for more resources to help you find the courage, confidence, and skills to take control of your career and forge your own unique path. The Creative Careers in Medicine podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, water and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders past, present and emerging.